We're open for business live.
This is Sheffield Live.
Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. If your business has financial challenges requiring professional insight and solutions, Begbies Trainer can help. We provide advice designed to help people and companies deal successfully with debt and financial problems. And wherever possible, we will find the best solution that allows for active steps towards financial recovery. Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. We are committed to providing a rapid and responsive service based on in-depth experience, professionalism and independent specialist expertise. Contact our Sheffield office or visit begbies-trainergroup.com.
We're open for business live.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock. It's Friday. It's the 17th of March, 2017. I'm Jamie Veitch. I'm your host for the next hour of Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live. We're shivering in the studio, the Sheffield Live studio, above the showroom in the centre of Sheffield today. It's cold. What's been going on in your business, in your social enterprise, in your week this week? I've been to London yesterday, specifically to Hackney, where the streets are paved with hipsters. It's been a good week. A good week for lots of you. Lots of you have got in touch after last week's programme. We had the Angler's Rest, a community-owned pub in Bamford, on the show last week. They talked about how they bought the pub. It was going to be threatened. The village was at risk of losing its pub. But they did something about it. They got together, they bought the pub, and they've turned it into a thriving community business. It's spending around £200,000 with other businesses in its supply chain as well, buying locally. So if you missed that interview, and it was a fascinating one in terms of how they did what they have done with Rebecca and Amanda from the Angler's Rest, then panic not, because you can find it on the podcast section of the Sheffield Live website. All you need to do is go to sheffieldlive.org, look up radio shows, find Business Live, and find the show from last Friday, the 10th of March, where you can hear all about the Angler's Rest. But what's coming up today? Well, I'm really pleased to say we have someone who's a copywriter, an author, an entrepreneur, passionate about helping small businesses and helping people running small businesses. She ran away with the circus as well. That's Vicky Fraser, and we have an in-depth interview with her coming up. She knows what it's like for small businesses going from feast to famine, and she tells you how to do something about it. So don't miss that. That's the centrepiece of today's programme in a few minutes. Before we play the interview with Vicky, which I recorded on Monday of this week, what else has been going on in business this week? Well, of course, the Chancellor, Philip Hammond, has ditched his plans to increase national insurance contributions for the self-employed and has defended his U-turn. He said that the government sets great store in the faith and trust of Britons and hopes that the reversal shows we are listening. But he's been criticised by many for the U-turn, which followed a revolt by backbench MPs who accused him of breaking one of the Conservatives' manifesto commitments. The Treasury and Number 10 have insisted that the decision has been taken jointly by the Chancellor and Theresa May. Mr. Hammond says it's important that he and the Prime Minister met the spirit of the Tories' manifesto pledge. Labour say the climb down is shocking and humiliating, but the Conservative backbenchers who were against the increase are obviously pleased. Now, listener Chris Broom got in touch with this programme last week, and he got in touch with us before this U-turn was announced, because we did ask listeners to tell us what you think about the potential increase in national insurance contributions for self-employed people. And listener Chris Broom said that the raising of national insurance contributions for better-off self-employed people was the best announcement in the budget. He said that the significance is that the Chancellor recognised that the Conservatives' pledge to build a fairer society can't be met unless taxes are raised. And he added that the economy is growing in a way that greatly benefits the already wealthy, whilst increasing numbers of people are left behind. He said we have both a deficit and such severe cuts to spending that the health, social care and other vital sectors are struggling to function properly, especially in places like Sheffield. And Chris added, self-employed people point out they do not get holiday or sick pay, but they bypass the employer's national insurance contributions that do have to be paid by companies for all the workers they employ. And Chris then added that whilst I understand their indignation about a manifesto pledge being broken, their treatment does seem roughly fair compared to employees. The real fairness issue is that people doing well in our society should make a contribution to it. So Chris put a convincing argument there. And I then asked him what he thought after the U-turn was announced. And he said, I'm very disappointed at the U-turn. I wish that the Labour and Lib Dem parties had recognised that the measure was a vital first move towards restoring a fair society, or a fairer society. It's exactly the sort of measure I hope that they could have taken. And he added, it would be great if the Chancellor can find a politically easy and fair way to raise the £2 billion, but I doubt he can. So what do you think? Other people, as I say, have welcomed the climb down or the U-turn, however you want to describe it. Was it fair? Is it fair that there's been a U-turn? As ever, we welcome your views. You can email jamie@sheffieldlive.org. You can text 07904 272 200. You can find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter as well. And we're always interested to hear from you. A couple of other things that have been going on this week. Yorkshire's largest ever hydroelectric power plant was officially opened this week. Over £5 million has been invested to launch a new power plant. It's at Kirkthorpe. It's the largest low-head river hydro plant ever to be built in Yorkshire. It's the largest plant commissioned in England since the start of the century. And it will generate electricity 24 hours a day, 12 months of the year for the next 100 years. And enough to supply 800 homes. And the development was completed on time, on budget, and apparently 88% of the contracts were placed with British companies. Many of those businesses were local to the area. A small business barometer has been launched and they want to hear from you. Enterprise Nation is the organisation that have launched their research project, the Small Business Barometer. Their last survey ran last summer. 1,000 people responded. That gave Enterprise Nation an accurate view, they say, of the confidence of Britain's small and micro businesses so that they can provide support. They want to know what's changed and they're inviting you to fill in the survey. I'll tweet the link out to that when the show ends. And Google is being summoned before the government to explain why taxpayers are unwittingly funding extremists through advertising, according to a report first picked up in the Times newspaper and now publicised elsewhere this morning. The Cabinet Office has joined some of the world's largest brands in pulling millions of pounds in marketing spend from YouTube after an investigation showed that rape apologists, anti-Semites and banned hate preachers were receiving payouts from publicly subsidised adverts on the internet company's video platform on YouTube. There's more on that in the Times newspaper and others today. So it's almost time to bring in our guest today, Vicky Fraser. But just one other quick reminder, you can get in touch with us. And we always welcome your views, your input, your suggestions for what you want to hear on this programme or who you'd like to hear on this programme. Put yourself forward as a guest, put someone else forward too. Or tell us what you think of what we've been covering, what you'd like to hear more about. Email jamie@sheffieldlive.org, text 07904 272 200. Find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter too. And whether you're running or starting a small business or a social enterprise, if you're an employer, if you're an employee, if you're self-employed, we're always keen to hear from you. So what's it like running a small business, going from feast to famine? Can you do something about it? Well, yes, you can, according to Vicky Fraser, my guest today. She's passionate about helping small business superheroes, as she describes them. And I caught up with her in an in-depth interview on Monday. It's packed with nuggets of advice on pricing, on positioning, on the power of writing a book to benefit your business, and much, much more. We'll play the interview with Vicky now.
This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business life.
Joining me today, Vicky Fraser describes herself as a copywriter, author, small business expert, and someone who ran away with the circus. Vicky, I'm delighted to have you on the line. Hello.
Hi, Jamie. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for coming on the show today. And I've been an avid reader of your blogs, your articles, your book, of course, and a listener to your podcast. But for people who've never come across you before, you've had a really interesting story yourself. You had the job from hell. It sent you into what you said was a self-destructive spiral of despair. But you didn't get fired because you quit. What happened, and how did that lead you into working for yourself?
Well, yes, I was lured away from a great job with a charity to a job that was much closer to where I lived at the time, a bit more money, and I just thought, oh, time to move on, let's try something new. And it turned out to be the worst job in the world, which I'm not going to go into boring details, but for a variety of reasons. And plus, I should point out as well that I didn't make my own life any easier, so I bear some responsibility for that. But it all kind of culminated in an explosive day where I was called into a meeting and I got to utter the amazing words, "You can't fire me because I quit."
Fantastic.
So that was exciting because I had nothing to go to at the time, and I remember sitting in the car, sobbing down the phone to my husband and just going, "I don't know what to do now." And he was like, it's fine, everything's going to be fine. You can afford to be off work for a couple of months. So that's kind of how that started. And I just got talking to a friend of mine who is a designer, who I kind of roped into doing some work for this company from hell. And he said, "Well, how do you fancy doing a bit of freelance writing?" And I thought, okay, I can give that a go. And that's kind of how it all started, really.
Great stuff. So, like many people who then go into a freelance world and start doing something creative, and this does seem to happen to a lot of creative people, it wasn't always plain sailing at first for you, was it, in terms of some of the clients that you were working with weren't necessarily treating you with the respect that someone doing a professional job well deserves?
Well, no, I mean, it is really, you know, it's quite a culture shock for anybody going from steady employment to freelance or self-employment, really, because you don't know where the next paycheck's coming from and all the rest of it, which is precisely why I now do what I do, because, you know, you should put yourself in a position where you do know where the next money's coming from. But, yeah, right back at the beginning, oh, my God, I wish I had known then what I know now, which is that people will treat you how you allow them to treat you. And, you know, when you first start out, you don't know anything, you don't know anybody, and you don't really know what you're doing. And so you kind of look to what's going on around you as to how to behave. And, you know, it's how we learn as we grow up. And you know, you look to what other people are doing to see what's successful. And so, yeah, I've kind of been, you know, as soon as I started freelancing, oh God, you know, how does this work? What comes next? How do I talk to clients? And, you know, you fall for the whole customer is always right thing, which is absolutely not true. And you think, oh, you know, I have to do it like this, and I can't charge more than that, and all the rest of it. And so, because you end up worried about where the next money's coming from, you take whatever comes along, which is another horrible mistake that I wish I'd known then. You kind of take, you know, anything that comes along because you're not sure where the next money's coming from. And yeah, I just ended up with, I remember one guy who offered to pay me in fish and chips, which actually was not the worst thing in the world.
if you like fish and chips.
But I later found out that he never paid a friend of mine for a tin of paint that he had for his shop. So,
oh dear.
So, yeah, but I mean, that kind of person is terrible to work with because it's just endless arguments about, oh, you know, can you do me a deal? What's your best price? Which, by the way, my answer now for what's your best price is, well, I can stick another zero on it for you if you like.
Yes, absolutely.
But yeah, that was kind of one example of a client. I had another client, oh my God, he was terrible person in every way, but he had a track record, which I didn't know at the time, of not paying anybody for anything, and I think I did quite well to get a small portion of the money that he owed me after me. But I walked away from that one with him owing me about $6,000, which at the time was a hell of a lot of money that I couldn't really afford to walk away from.
Crikey, that must have felt terrible, and surely a huge blow to sort of self-esteem and self-confidence at that time.
It was, yeah, because and that was the worst thing, really, because this guy was, I'm fairly sure he was a sociopath, to be honest, looking back, but he was, when you're just starting out and you know, you haven't got that much confidence, you really do place far too much weight on what other people think of you. And you know, he'd managed to turn it around so that it was all my fault, and, you know, the fact that I stopped working for him because he stopped paying me was now my fault that his deal was going to fall through, which, looking back, is hilarious. But at the time, was just kind of, you know, you get in the middle of it and it's, oh my God, what's happening and what have I done wrong and all the rest of it. And it wasn't until I spoke to my mentor, Peter, who had kind of, he got me to take a step back and kind of look at, you know, all the good stuff that was going on as well as the bad stuff, and kind of think, well, okay, this is actually not your problem. It's not your fault. It's, you know, it's nothing to do with you, and this dude is clearly crazy.
Yes. Yeah, quite. So you had that sort of objective view from a mentor early on, and your mentor, Peter, who's someone you've interviewed on your own podcast as well.
But, yeah.
So that must have been pretty helpful, pretty essential, really.
Oh, God, yeah, it was really helpful. I wouldn't be where I am now if I hadn't met Peter and another, you know, another mentor, John. But yeah, it's just really useful to have a bit of outside perspective, because with the best will in the world, even if your partner and your family and your friends are all on board with what you're doing, they're still looking at things from the inside. So to have someone from the outside kind of, you know, look at what you're doing and look at what's going on and sort of, you know, put a really rational view on it, is really, really helpful. And you know, he pointed out that, because at the time, when you're first starting out and you're worried about money and all the rest of it, you attach all of this emotional rubbish to money, and you forget that actually, you know, you can always make more money.
Yes.
If you want to, you can always make more money. You can't get your time back, and time wasted worrying about people like that is just, it's tragic waste, I think, now. So he kind of got me to step back and think, well, you know what, that's a lot of money to lose, but, you know, just let go of it and move on to the next thing. And it was entirely the right advice to have.
Absolutely invaluable advice there to have, and that allowed you then to move on, did it, from the painful situation of being, I think we can describe it as being ripped off by a client. So you moved on and you learned from that. You learned from Peter and, as you said, another mentor. But what was the process of going from there, from those early stages of taking sort of just about anything because there was money being offered, to working with clients who treat you well, respect what you offer them, and that pay you on time and so on? You've... you know, we'll talk in a moment or two about the way that you support your own clients now these days. But aside from Peter's advice and your other mentor, John's advice, how did it happen? What steps did you go down to get to where you are?
Well, yeah, basically, quite early on in the beginning, I realised that swapping time for money was always going to be a finite thing. There's only so much that you can do, because even with the best positioning in the world and the highest fees in the world, there's always going to come a point where, you know, you run out of time. And so I had thought, well, there must be a better way of doing this than kind of doing this rollercoaster feast and famine nonsense that so many small business owners get stuck in. And I totally understand why, because I've been there. And I just thought, there must be a better way of doing this. And so, you know, I've been doing an awful lot of studying of copywriting, because that's my core business, that's my core skill.
Yes.
I haven't really done an awful lot of looking into how to actually run and grow a business, because, you know, it tends to be that people who start businesses start something because they're really good at it and because they really love it. And, you know, they genuinely are brilliant at that, and they tend to really crap at actually running a business. And I can say that with, you know, without worrying about offending anybody, because I was totally there. You know, I was a really good copywriter and I was utterly rubbish at running a business.
Yes, absolutely.
Which is why I went out and found out how to do it. So I kind of went along to one of Peter's days, and it was just such an eye-opener, because he showed me so many things that I had never even considered, that, you know, the mainstream kind of business and marketing world just doesn't talk about, because there's kind of textbooks that, you know, you have to do it like this and you have to do it like that. But that's not true at all. And so he showed me ways that I could, you know, raise my status, raise my expert status, elevate myself in the eyes of my clients, and also start running a side of the business that was... enable me to do something once, but sell it many, many times.
Yes, absolutely. So rather than just exchanging time for money, to productize, if you like, the things that you would offering people so that you, and get a much better return on your expertise and on your time.
Yeah, and also the other thing that that did for me was take out the random factor, because I quite often hear, and this frustrates me so much, I quite often hear people, you know, blaming their problems on the economy or on the government or on, and you know, this thing with the national insurance at the moment is probably the latest thing to kind of make me roll my eyes a little bit, because in the end, none of this stuff should make any difference to your business. If you can put yourself in a position where all of this extraneous stuff doesn't have any effect on you, or not any appreciable effect, it doesn't matter. You can let it roll off, and that's the whole point of what I'm trying to do for myself and my business, and what I'm trying to do for my clients. I don't want to be beholden to the whims of government or the economy or even clients and customers. I would much rather put my success in my own hands and be proactive about it and create my own path and react to what's going on around me. And I think that's probably one of the biggest mistakes that I see business owners make, is just kind of passively going with the flow and allowing things to happen to them. It's kind of the old maxim. You can't always control what happens to you, but you can control how you react to it and how you learn from it and what you do going forward. And, you know, to cope with, to make all this stuff, you know, all this extra outside stuff not relevant, it takes time and effort, but it's not actually that difficult. It just requires you to think about things a little bit differently and to put systems in place and, you know, build your business in such a way that actually you can do whatever the hell you want and stop everybody else.
Yeah, quite. And a remarkable number of businesses can be systemized. So lots of people in a whole range of industries who've started off down this sort of service client route with a creative business, say, or a solopreneur business, have made that mistake of being too nice and then giving time away for free, even in terms of allowing people to, perhaps to take them for granted. And it's about being, I suppose, proud of that knowledge and expertise, as well as systemizing things. And taking control seems to be something that, well, you've just been talking about that. So the external effects, you're not at their mercy. You control your response to them. It's a theme that's come up a few times on this program, of course.
Yeah, I'm sure it has. Yeah, but you said something that I've got a funny story for you in a second, actually, about giving away your time for free. But you know, all of this stuff, but everything that I'm doing now and where I've got to now and, you know, the journey that I'm taking is really all to do with positioning. And it's really about, I think people think that they can't, it's like they're waiting for permission to do things a bit differently, because we, as humans, we tend to look around and naturally look for what everybody else is doing. Whereas if you really want to be successful in business, actually you have to ignore what everybody else is doing a lot of the time and kind of do the opposite. It's kind of about being your own best client first, because a lot of the time you'll hear people sort of say, oh, you know, I haven't got time to do this, that and the other, I'm too busy with client work. That's complete nonsense. I nearly swore then.
We nearly got the Sheffield Live bleeper out there.
Yeah, one of my biggest pieces of advice to my clients and then the people that I mentor now is be your own best client. It's like, you know, when you're in an aircraft and they tell you to put your own oxygen mask on before you help anybody else.
Yeah.
Same in business. If you are drowning in, you know, worries and stressing about money, and you're drowning in client work, you can't possibly give everybody the best service that you possibly can. You have to put yourself first, because if you don't, you're going to be doing your clients a disservice, and you're going to be running yourself into an early grave. So one of my biggest pieces of advice is make the first hour of every day dedicated to building your own business, working on your business rather than in it. And, you know, always be willing to pay yourself first, and, you know, that way you'll start to value yourself more.
Quite, yes. That's crucial advice, I think. But it's so easy for people to ignore or to forget to do. They just go straight into sort of the day-to-day things that need to be done. And then the strategic thinking doesn't happen. And as you say, you can get then completely pulled around.
Absolutely. I'm just going to go back to what you said about free as well, because I've got a funny story. And before I dive into that, I'm just going to point out that, if, you know, for any business owners listening, if your product or service genuinely helps people, you know, if what you do genuinely adds some value to the world and to people's lives, and it should, or you shouldn't be in business, Why don't you charge more? Why do you undervalue yourself? You're doing a disservice to your clients, apart from anything else, if you're not willing to charge what you're worth. So, and on that note, people do not value free, generally. And that, I was talking to a client of mine who came to a workshop last year, and she was telling me that she'd started, on my advice, charging for initial meetings because it will get rid of tire kickers and it will get rid of people who are, you know, just trying to get through it for nothing. And she had no pushback at all except for from one charity client who had said, oh, well, you know, this has been my 9 years of being a marketing manager. I've never come across this before and all the rest of it. And then she, my client said, well, you know, last time she wanted to work with these guys and she'd already reduced the fee and all the rest of it because it's a charity pro bono work, some very good stuff, which I do as well. I do pro bono work.
Yes.
Last time she'd met with this charity representative, she'd met with them for free to talk about what they wanted and what they needed so she could go away and put a proposal. And the woman that she was meeting was 1.5 hours late, which is so rude.
That's ridiculous, isn't it? That's awful. Yeah,
and then the meeting itself lasted for 2 hours. And you just think, you know what? That's kind of going back again to people will treat you how you allow them to treat you. And, you know, even if it's a charity that you're doing work with and you want to reduce your fees and whatnot, there is no excuse for treating people like that.
No, absolutely.
You know, people simply don't value free.
No, they don't. And that's a really good story. And it's a great demonstration of what people do value. And as you say, I mean, it doesn't mean you can't do pro bono work or voluntary work for something that you believe in because you're passionate about it and you care about it. Or people do pro bono work for other reasons as well. But it's how you position that, I suppose, isn't it? It's how you communicate why you're doing what you're doing with them. And that's very, very different from just doing stuff for free for exposure. Ho, ho, ho.
I always tell people if they get offered exposure, they should turn around and moon the person offering it.
Indeed. So you learned a huge amount by the sounds of it then, and took yourself away from the horrible clients that didn't appreciate what you were doing and what you could offer them. You systemized your business and you launched a membership part of your business so that people could have access to your expertise within a sort of gated community, if you like. And you published a book as well. How did that go? And there are lots of benefits of publishing a book for readers in whatever industry. What made you do it?
Oh, man, it was an accountability group that I'm in. And I basically rather foolishly stood up in one of the meetings and said, right, my goal for the next 3 months is to write my book. And because I'd said it out loud in front of them, I kind of had to do it. So I came home and I wrote my book in wrote and published it in 3 months and took a copy of it to the next meeting. And before it was actually printed, I managed to pre-sell more than 100 copies. So I was really, really pleased with that because I'd pre-sold it to people who are on my email list. And if you haven't got an email list, dear listeners, then sort that out because, you know, it's gold.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's a really, really good idea to write a book because I kind of agonised over it for ages because, you know, in my industry, the copywriting and marketing industry is absolutely saturated with books on all kinds of subjects. And I just thought, well, what have I got to offer that's new? And that completely decides the point. I didn't understand the point back then. And it's not really about the content because, you know, you can... What I've said in my book, there's nothing new in terms of the lessons in there and the learning from it. But what is new is my take on it. There are no other books out there by, you know, Vicky Fraser, copywriter who ran away with the circus. There's no other books that say things in exactly the same way that I do. And there are no other books out there on marketing that are probably quite as honest and raw as mine because there's an awful lot of, you know, myself and my experiences and my feelings in that book. And you know, most books tend to be quite dry anyway. I don't think I'm being too unreasonable by saying most marketing books and business books are fairly dull. There are fewer dull ones now. There are more and more good ones popping up because more and more interesting people are realising the value of writing a book.
And injecting something of themselves into it. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Because this is all about relationships. I mean, it's partly about about setting yourself up as an expert in your niche, and a book will absolutely do that, because rightly or wrongly, we still, you know, we still venerate authors and think that they're somehow special, which of course we are.
Of course.
You know, the other thing is, though, is, you know, there's no such thing really as B2B or B2C. It's all person to person. We do business with people, not with businesses. We choose to do business with people based on whether or not we like them and trust them. And it's really got very little, unless you're something like Coca-Cola or Pepsi or whatever, you know, it's really got very little to do with branding in that traditional sense. It's much more to do with, well, do I like this person? Do I trust them? Do I want to be in their world?
Yes, absolutely. And so in terms of building trust as well, the book demonstrates that you're an expert, but without the sort of, as you say, there have in the past been all sorts of dull and dry books written. You can be an expert, you can demonstrate your knowledge and your skills and so on, but you can also be yourself in the book. That seems to be the beauty of it. You can get that personality, that unique you. So however many people are writing a book about whatever area it is that you're writing about, there's only one you. And at the same time, you're demonstrating that expertise. Is that a fair summary?
Absolutely, yeah. The whole package, and if you put that together with everything else you do as well, then you know you've got this really powerful. I'm reluctant to use the word branding, because it's kind of been, you know, traditional branding is not really what I'm talking about. But you know, it's your personal brand that like you say, it's you, it's who you are, and you can bring that to your book. You can it's putting your take on stuff that is probably in the world in a million different places, but it's putting your take on it and making it very much you, and making people want to hear it from you rather than from the other person down the road.
Absolutely. Brilliant. So you did it. You went away, you did it, and you wrote it in 3 months, in 90 days. You even pre-sold it by having an email list that you cultivate and you communicate with on a daily basis, and people were telling them about it before you published it so that people would buy it. And the books had a secondary benefit as well, in that because you proved that you could do it, presumably people asked you how to do it, and that led to something else as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because I've actually written a lot of books, but only one under my name. I ghostwrite for all my clients as well, and I've got a second book on the way. But yeah, that did kind of lead to an awful lot of people saying, "Oh, well, you know, how did you do that? And how would I write a book?" So I was like, "Well, I could probably teach people how to do this." So I've got a little course that's called Published in 90 Days, or Write and Publish a Book in 90 Days, and it's basically an entire system for coming up with an idea, planning, writing, publishing, printing and publishing, sticking it online, and marketing your book and turning it into, because it's really so much more than, I mean, you don't write a book to become a best-selling author. If that happens as a side effect, then, you know, that's fabulous. But that's not why I teach people to write books. I get people to write books because it's a really good marketing tool. It's something that you can hang the rest of your marketing off. So rather than marketing your business, you're selling your book, and that will sell what you do.
Yes, absolutely. So there's a fantastic secondary benefit for people who do it. It's a brilliant business card as well to hand someone a book to say, you know, this is a book I've written. It's positioning you as that expert as well. So brilliant.
Absolutely. I don't have business cards anymore. I remember going to a networking. I don't really do networking. But I went to a networking thing last year or so. They said, oh, yeah, you know, you need to put some business cards along. And so every time somebody asked for my business card, I gave them a book. And everyone was like, wow, that's amazing.
Yes, I bet. I bet people absolutely love that, because that's so different, isn't it? That's being handed a book at a networking event. Fantastic. Okay, so I thought it would be good to give people, to give listeners some specific tips if we can. And of course, you've already given listeners loads of specific tips in this interview. It's gold, really, for anyone about marketing, what you've already said. But let's just round things off with, you work with lots of business owners. Some are members of your membership group, and we'll mention that at the end of the interview so that people can find out more. We'll mention the website. And you work with people on a one-to-one basis as well. You do copywriting, and as you've said, you ghostwrite people's books for them and with them. But if you're sort of working with business owners, what are the biggest or most frequent challenges that people ask you about, or that people are getting stuck with?
Okay, so there's probably two main things actually, but I'll just give you one. And I can give you a specific example, actually, because I had a borrow my brain session. I do a thing where people can borrow my brain with one of my members, and she had asked me all of the issues. I've got to do all this stuff, and, you know, I haven't got time to do it, and blah, blah, blah. And I kind of had a chat with her, and I said, well, you know, what's your mission? What do you need to do? And she told me that she needed to get rid of agency clients and get more higher-paying private clients. And I said, well, why are you focusing on all this other stuff then? And, you know, so we kind of refocused her. What I did with her and what I found myself doing more and more often is helping people to reprioritize what they're doing and finding extra time to focus on the thing that they need to be focusing on to get them closer to their goals. Because people get very distracted by all of the bright, shiny whistles and bells and marketing tactics and, you know, the social media this and
yes,
new app that. And they kind of lose sight of the fact that it's the strategies and principles that will take them where they need to go. The tactics are just incidental tools to use along the way. And they get really distracted with all this extra stuff. So I found, actually, that one of the most frequent questions I get asked at the moment is, how do I find more time for this? But actually, what they need is to point themselves in a slightly different direction and focus really tightly on that and just stop doing the other stuff that isn't going to get them any closer.
Right, yes, indeed. So they need to focus, they need to prioritise, and they need to remember that tactics change, but strategy needs to underpin it and to continue to focus on that. And are there specific ways you help them to maintain that focus, having helped them to realise that?
So what I normally get them to do is I'll get them to do their goals every month anyway, but every quarter anyway, but every week we kind of do Achievement Fridays, and it's like, well, okay, what have you achieved this week? That's really helpful as well, actually. That's probably a really good thing to get people to do, is write down what you've achieved this week, because quite often people go, oh, I've got nothing done. And as soon as you sit down and write, it's like, actually, I've got shedloads done. It's a real boost. But the other thing I get them to do each week is to say, well, okay, what's your focus for next week? How is it going to get you closer to your goal? What's your mission? And is this in line with your mission? And if it's not, stop doing it or give it to somebody else to do. And if it is, then great, let's get that done.
Right, brilliant. So that sort of accountability and assistance in prioritisation must really help people get on the track that they want to, well, that will get their business to where they actually want it to be without being distracted. Superb.
Exactly.
Excellent. And I suppose, I think we've covered perhaps something you wish you'd known when you originally started working for yourself, because I think you've gone into quite a lot of depth about that early on in the chat today. Is there anything we've missed that it would have been good to know? I mean, you found a mentor early on, and loads of the people who come on this radio show, whether they're running a business or a social enterprise, and whether that's a small one-person business or a big business, a lot of people have talked about the value of finding a mentor. So it's great to hear that from you as well, Vicky. Have I missed anything, or have you missed anything that you wish you had known when you started off?
Probably the biggest thing is that I've learned is that price is completely elastic. And because you get into this, like, especially if you listen to friends and family, which is a terrible thing to do if you run a business. If they're not in their business and they don't run a business as well, then smile and nod and then ignore them because they don't know what they're talking about. But quite often you'll get people who are saying, oh, they'll never pay that for this, or I couldn't possibly charge that. It's utter rubbish. People will, if people want something, they will find the money to pay for it. It's like, if you know, you look at people who say they're really skint, and then you think, well, you know, have you got Sky TV? Are you buying a Starbucks every day on your way to work? And the answer to those things is usually yes. We find the money for stuff that we want. You know, it's not your, you can have a bit of a social conscience and all the rest of it, and I'm absolutely not in favour of ripping anybody off ever for anything, but charge what you're worth, because if you're, you know, people will pay for what they want, and price is very elastic. And the other thing that I've learned, which is related to that, is that if you are charging too little, you won't even get on the radar of the more affluent people who have got the money to pay for what you want to sell them. And,
indeed,
you know, they won't give you a second glance. So, you know, if you're aiming for kind of, I don't know, John Lewis level customers, and you're charging Primark prices, the John Lewis level customers won't even look at you.
No.
No, so, you know, if somebody was selling something like, here's an example, we're getting an architect in, so we're doing a coffee shop, which is basically a money pit, and we decided that we needed an architect, we didn't know what the hell we were doing. If he'd come back and said, oh yeah, it's £500 and we'll do some plans, we probably would have walked away because, frankly, I don't, you know, this is going to be our home. We're looking at quite a large budget, and for an architect to come along and say that, you know, it's going to be a few hundred quid, it would make us suspicious, is what I'm saying, basically.
Yes.
So, you know, people will, and that's not to say he would necessarily have been bad. He probably, you know, probably there are some very good architects out there who don't charge very much. It's just that he would not have got our business because we wouldn't have been looking for somebody at that level. And that's kind of what I'm saying. Price is very, very elastic. You can, if you add value, if you give great value, if your product or service is wonderful, but then you give something extra that makes you special, that makes you stand out, you can charge an awful lot more for what you do, and people will pay it very happily.
Yes, and that's a really, really good lesson for people listening, whether they're running a straightforward business or a social enterprise. And in fact, as I always say, there's no monopoly on saints or sinners. There are a huge number of what you might say traditional businesses, because they exist, because they create work, they make the world a better place. And there are plenty of charities and social enterprises that are badly run and treat people really badly. There are plenty that are really good. And what you just said, I mean, that covers a number of things. First of all, if you're going to charge what you're worth, you have to do a fantastic job and be really, really good. But then do go out and charge what you're worth. That's a hugely important lesson. And some people simply will not look at you if your product or your service is too cheap. They won't think I'm getting a bargain. They'll think you can't be good enough.
Yeah.
And that elasticity is really interesting. And some listeners of this show might remember a few months ago, we interviewed the head of marketing, the marketing director of Divine Chocolate. And Divine Chocolate is owned by the farmers in Ghana. It's, you know, it's better than fair trade, if you like, because it's creating income for a village that would otherwise be incredibly poor. And the cocoa beans are fantastic. And the marketing director came on this program and she said their first marketing efforts were all about farmer-owned chocolate, and they didn't sell much. And then when they invested in, first of all, the brand, secondly, the packaging, and then made the marketing be all about a premium product, which is a treat. You know, you deserve fantastic chocolate. It's your treat. They sold far more. And then, of course, they have much more social impact as well in terms of, you know, they're creating jobs in the UK and creating money for the villages of Ghana. So everyone wins. But that's positioning.
Great example, actually, because there's going to be quite a hard pill to swallow for an awful lot of your listeners, I would imagine, because I find it's like butting your head against the wall sometimes. People do not want to believe that actually, with the best will in the world, we don't really care that much about stuff that goes on outside of our own little heads. And that's not to say that we are awful people, it's just to say that, you know, what we care about is very immediate to us. And unless there's something that kind of makes, you know, the plight of the Ghanaian farmers very immediate to you, is like if you actually meet somebody, you're not going to care that much about them on a personal level. So you have to make the marketing that you do speak to people on a personal level. And the way that the marketing manager for the chocolate sounds awesome, actually, and quite a gem in a world where people don't get this.
Yes.
She's obviously kind of got that actually what people want is a treat. Chocolate, people don't want to be thinking about hardship when they're eating chocolate. That's not what chocolate's all about.
Yes,
and then, you know, by doing it that way and focusing on the really selfish aspects of chocolate, she's made the lives of the farmers better as well. So it's win-win for everybody.
Win-win indeed, absolutely. So, and clearly you've helped numerous business owners to understand this sort of pricing and positioning and the importance of it. And it's worked for you and it's working for your clients as well, Vicky, by the sounds of it.
It is, yeah. I still get the odd question and the odd pushback from people who still find it hard to get their heads around it. Because we as a society, we have a really messed up relationship with money and wealth. And, you know, the undoing years and years and years worth of conditioning is really bloody hard work, frankly. But,
yes.
But yeah, absolutely. As soon as they kind of understand that pricing is very elastic and it's all to do with how you position yourself, then their lives do get easier and they do make more money.
Absolutely. Well, that's a fantastic note to end on, because if your business is successful and you're making that money in return for the expertise that you have or the fantastic service or products you deliver, then of course you can invest in your own development, in the things you want to do with your life, in making the world a better place, in whatever you want to do. It gives you that freedom, and Vicky Fraser can help you to do that. Vicky, for people who've been listening to you and your wisdom and expertise and experience and want to hear more, they can first of all, people can read your book, which I recommend. It's a great read. It's interesting, of course. It's lively, it's engaging, it's fun, it's humorous, and if you read it, you'll take away huge number of lessons that you can apply in your own business. So how do people get hold of your book?
At the moment, I'm actually having a new website built at the moment, but at the moment you can get my book from businesstosuperheroes.com. That's all one word, businesstosuperheroes.com. Or VickyFraser.com. There'll be a link to the book on there as well.
Excellent. And you also mentioned earlier on you'll publish your book in 90 days course, so people who thinking of writing a book and understand how that can benefit their business, whatever their business, you can write a book about your expertise within it. So that course people can find online as well.
Yeah, that's published in 90days.com. That's all one word as well, and the 90 is numerals, not letters, so published in 90days.com. And if you are if you think you're going to struggle, because I've only recently realised actually that a lot of people buy courses and then they don't do anything with them because it's quite a lot of work. So if you think that's going to be you, then I actually do offer book coaching as well, and I'm coaching a couple of people at the moment to write their book, and they get a weekly call with me to do it, to get it done, and there's a lot of feedback and all the rest of it, so there's that option as well. But yeah, the course is published in 90days.com.
Excellent. Superb. Well, that's been fascinating, Vicky. And we did say at the start of the show, copywriter, author, marketing and small business expert, and I use the word expert. I'd hate to use the word guru, but someone who's walked the walk and as well as taught the talk. But we also said ran away with the circus. So we're going to let you run away with the circus right now, if that's what next today. What's the story there?
Going to my trapeze class later on.
Fantastic.
So, I actually did run away with circus. I've been pole dancing for 10 years now, and about 4 or 5 years ago I discovered a circus skills class as well. So now I'm a pole dancer, trapeze artist, rope person, and I do a little bit of gymnastic tumbling and stuff as well.
Excellent. Well, enjoy the class tonight. Hope that goes well. Thank you so much for joining us for the interview today. There's been a huge amount of lessons and fantastic advice there. Vicky Fraser, thank you.
Thank you very much, Jamie.
This is Sheffield Live.
We're open.
You're listening to Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM, sheffieldlive.org with me, Jamie Veitch. Business Live is our weekly programme focusing on business and social enterprise. So if you want to get in touch, put yourself or someone else forward as a guest, you can do so. Email jamie@sheffieldlive.org, text 07904 272 200. Find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter too. You've just heard an in-depth 37-minute interview with Vicky Fraser. She's an author, an entrepreneur, a copywriter, a marketing and small business expert. She's passionate about small business superheroes, as she describes them. If that sounds like you and you've only just tuned in, you've missed some incredible nuggets, some advice, some experience, and some suggestions that will help you in your business. So if you have only just tuned in, then don't panic, because today's programme will be up on the Sheffield Live website as a podcast from about 11 a.m. today. You'll be able to find it at sheffieldlive.org. Look up radio shows, find Business Live, and then you'll find the podcast from today, Friday the 17th of March, where you'll be able to tune in and listen to your heart's content. You can listen through the website, you can download it and listen on your device. Of course, whilst you're there, you can explore a wealth of other material, exciting music programmes, whether it's Northern Soul and Motown, whether it's folk, whether it's classic rock, swing, jazz, Elvis, reggae, much, much more. It's all on there on the Sheffield Live website. So tune in, explore, have a listen, find something new. What else is going on in business and social enterprise this week? Well, actually, coming up next week, there's an event from the Sheffield City Region Mentoring Team and the Business and IP Centre Sheffield, our friends at the Business IP Centre, who run all sorts of events for people. But there's a special event on becoming a business mentor or seeking a business mentor. And you've just heard in the interview with Vicky Fraser about the enormous value of mentoring in business and about how by finding a mentor early when she went freelance, she probably saved her sanity after clients were treating her badly. And she gave herself the tools to propel her business forwards. So on Wednesday, 22nd of March, there's a Business Mentor Programme networking event. It's organised by the Sheffield City Region Mentoring Team. You can go along. You do need to book. I'll tweet the link out to do so at the end of this radio programme from my Twitter account, Jamie Veach. And the Sheffield City Region Mentoring Team is part of Launchpad. It's a service to provide mentees with quality mentors who can offer professional guidance and information, enabling their businesses to develop, to grow and to become sustainable. So it's worth going along to this event next week. You can get details. And as I say, I'll tweet the link out. It's also on Eventbrite. If you were to go to eventbrite.co.uk, look up BIPC Sheffield, Sheffield City Region Business Mentoring Programme, you'll find it. And that event's next Wednesday, 22nd of March, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. What else is going on? Well, of course, it's SHAF this weekend, the Sheffield Adventure Film Festival. Returning for another year and yet again crammed with exciting stuff. So from films, of course, more than 100 of the best adventure, travel and extreme sports films, which have been handpicked for you from all over the world. But there's much more than films, family friendly events. And plenty more. Take a look at the SHAF website, shaf.co.uk, to find full details of the entire festival and what is going on. Next up on Sheffield Live is our fantastic folk music programme. Thank goodness it's folk. So that's on from 10 all the way through to midday. So tune in to that and don't go away because... we'll be back, of course, next Friday. We'll be back on air next Friday for Business Live, our business and social enterprise program. And if you've got a comment on what we've been covering, then you can get in touch. You can email me, you can text me, you can find me on Twitter and put yourself or someone else forward to be a guest. Quite a lot of people who end up on the show do so because they've responded to something that we've covered on the program. So it's worth getting in touch. Thanks for listening today. Thanks, of course, to our fantastic guest, Vicky Fraser, who I interviewed on Monday of this week. And that's well worth listening to. If you've only just tuned in, catch the podcast later. Thanks for listening. Thanks also to Sangeeta in the studio today as our sound engineer. We'll be back on air next Friday, 9 a.m. through to 10. But don't go away. Next up, it's Thank Goodness It's Folk. Before that, we're going to play out with a little bit of music from 1993 from D. Ream.
We're open for Business Live.